Blog Talk Radio.
Radio. The show is called Advanced Discussion. As always, I'm your host, Aaron, and of course, that was the lovely Electra and our bumper music there. We have a very special guest this morning. His name is Ole, and he's a distinguished researcher in conspiracy research and other related topics, originally hailing out of Sweden, I believe, but he's a worldwide traveler. Very interesting guy, very well experienced in these matters. And I originally heard him on Rents, and I was very impressed, and he's was kind enough to agree to come on the show today. So welcome, Ole, to the show. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. The honor is mine.
Okay, Ole, just to give us a quick background on you and your website so the visitor might want to learn more about you.
Okay, my name is Ole Damegård, and I'm a Swedish researcher. I used to be a journalist, and I can just say my website. It's www.lightonconspiracies.com. That's lightonconspiracies.com. And I have a book now called Coup d'etat in slow motion. Coup d'etat in slow motion. It's primarily about the assassination of the Swedish Prime Minister, Olof Palme, who was shot down in the street in 86. But I've also managed, during about 30 years of heavy research, to be able to establish some very, very strong links, direct links between the assassination of JFK, Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King, all the way up, John Lennon as well, all the way up to 9/11, and including the hit on the Swedish Prime Minister. And this is what the book is about. This is also where my main research has been for quite a while here. And since I came out with this information, there's been like a tidal wave of interest. I've been on international radio shows all over for the last 6 months, I think. And, I just feel there's a great awakening going on. It's amazing the interest that people have now. It's like people are popping up everywhere, just starting to see that, my God, something really weird is going on. And now they're finally opening up their eyes to find a solution, how to lift this beautiful world into a better place. Because at the moment, it's like there's a small group, a global elite, that are terrorizing this globe, and very few people are aware of who they really are and their different methods. So that's why I really focused on trying to identify them, but also trying to reveal the different methods they are using to dupe the public into not knowing what's going on, and also how they carry out assassinations and different terror acts and so on to be able to push forward their agenda, but them still being invisible. So I'm just trying to do my best to expose them so we can stop the madness and heal this world with love instead.
Well, Ole, I'm aware of Prime Minister Palme's conspiracy matter and the hit. From my contact, who was in the OSG's Bush Senior's crew, named Chip Tatum, he said the OSGs out of South Africa are the ones that pulled the hit on Palme. And does your book coincide with those kind of connections, or do you have another idea?
No, Chip Tatum is straight on. He's right to the point. But the thing is that these assassinations are most of the time very, very compartmentalized. You know, it's strictly on a need-to-know chain. So people, the actual mechanics who are doing the hit, they don't even know more than their own little part. They don't know each other. They only know the other people in the team by code names and so on. So it's very, very hard to find out the real truth. I mean, even if somebody chooses to become a whistleblower, he will only know very, very little. And it's designed like that, very on big purpose, you know, so that they can get away with it. The hit on Olof Palme is a lot bigger than Chip Tatum is suggesting. But he is very much correct. But the team that actually carried it out was members from South Africa, just like he says, but also America. There was an Italian guy, there was a Norwegian mercenary, there were Swedish people involved, and there were, South African agents? I think so, and also some West Germans. And this is also standard how they, when they're aiming to take someone out, the hit team, the team of assassins, are put together from people from different countries, different backgrounds, different groups, and so on. So there's no apparent connections to them, making it very, on purpose, very difficult to identify them as a group. So that the whole idea is that if someone like myself would go into a case like this, it will just point everywhere, you know, no connections between whoever was involved.
Right, you can't pin it on one nation, and so it becomes very confusing and by design.
It is, and it's made multi-layered. Very often they have more than one team at the site, and the two or three teams are not even aware of each other, meaning that when you start looking into it, it will just point all over the place.
Now, with Palme, the reason why he got in trouble was they were trying to run weapons through Sweden, and he wouldn't allow for that. Of course, we have today being reported how a ship was pulled over in, I think it was India or something, a U.S. ship trying to move weapons around, and they busted them. Isn't that really what happened with Palme? He wouldn't sign off on these weapons running through Sweden?
No, it's much, much bigger than that. It's an extremely complex assassination with many, many similarities to the JFK assassination. It's actually one of the biggest murder investigations in the history of the world, even though a lot of people have not even heard his name, but it's been going on for so many years, and it's so complex. But as you say, there are illegal weapons trafficking involved, but there's also a lot more. And he was one of the members himself. He was a multi-faced individual. You know, he was, the official version of him was that he was the man of the people, taking care of the weak. He was also the one, stretching out a hand towards the Palestinians, PLO, the Cubans, the Nicaraguans, and so on, the weak, so-called weak people. But actually, he was working for the banker elite and sort of like almost like a Trojan horse. And this was also one of the major reasons what got him into trouble, because it came to a point where he suddenly started doing things, making him totally not trustworthy to this global elite. And he started stopping these weapons deliveries that he was part of. He started doing, he gave away Sweden's rights to the North Sea oil. He also started trying to stop to make Scandinavia a nuclear-free zone, which was really messing up a whole scheme for NATO and so on. So from being one of their own guys, he suddenly turned on them and started going in a totally different direction. Just the same as JFK after the Cuban Missile Crisis, where he was sitting with a finger on the button, almost starting a nuclear world war. But after that, people who were there, they said that he was sitting with tears in his eyes, just saying, "I refuse to be the one that commits this atrocity." And I think from that day, it was like JFK suddenly discovered the magnitude of the things he was involved in, not knowingly, and just seeing that, my God, if we continue with this absolute madness, we're going to destroy the whole world. So from that point, he just suddenly started going in a totally different direction where he went. He was going to withdraw out of the Vietnam War. That hadn't even started. I mean, there was only like 16,000 American advisors down there. And it was a war that was inherited, or you took over from from France. There was actually nothing for the state to do there, but it was because of the opium trade and drug trading that the states wanted to go in there. He wanted to crush the CIA into a thousand pieces. He wanted to withdraw from the Federal Reserve, the so-called central bank, which is not a federal bank at all, but a private coalition of bankers, and an extremely, extremely criminal. And also many other things that just made him totally, they freaked out when he started doing these things. And he also turned against the mob and so on. So they just felt, my God, we need to take him out, and we need to take him out in a very violent way so that we can shake people in the power, the corridors of power, so that no one else tried to do the same thing. And that is why I believe that's the reason why they took him out in broad daylight, in front of cameras, in front of lots of people and so on. That was to make a statement saying to anyone that we can take anyone at any time, anywhere. So you just back off and stay in line with your mouth shut. And this is what happens from time to time, that they statue examples to send a wave of fear through the corridors of power. And this is also after these assassinations, it's almost like there's a second conspiracy that follows, because there's almost like a conspiracy of silence afterwards. It's just silence. Anything except the official story is just met by silence.
Well, Ole, I have to agree with that general concept. If you betray them, if they let you on the inside, if you were working with them before, and then you have a conscience fit, you know, they will whack you. This is the meme. This is the standard procedure. And, of course, JFK's father was running molasses, as they called it during Prohibition, with the mob on the East Coast. So that's very well known. So basically, he betrayed the mob in that way, you know, within the family there. So yeah, betrayal equals death. There's no question about it. I think your concepts are absolutely perfect. Please continue.
No, just like you say with JFK's father. I mean, JFK came to power. And he won the election over Kennedy. It was the closest race in history, and that was through the help of the Chicago mob with Sam Giancana and so on. So they were promised that if they helped JFK into the White House, he would be their guy. But what happened once he got there, he suddenly turned on them, you know, and he put his brother Bobby Kennedy in as the Minister of Justice, and he started chasing down the mob who had been left to run mad, you know, on their own, because J. Edgar Hoover was just looking the other way, just neglecting or totally refusing to acknowledge that the mob even existed. But then when Bobby Kennedy came, within a year, the verdict on mob members was like 700% higher. So they were really freaked out and very, very upset. But when you see these assassinations, they are almost done, I would say, following a template that was made by the old Romans. And this is also the way that I came in understanding of how these things are done, because in the early 1980s, that was the first time I saw the Zapruder film on how the JFK was actually shot, you know, not according to the official story, where he was shot from the back and to the right. But you can see with the headshot that he's actually hit from the right front. He's thrown backwards and to the left. And when I saw that in the early 1980s, I just felt, my God, we've been fed a lot of bullshit here. I need to find out what's going on. So I became almost obsessed with the case, and I think I read at least 100 books or more. And one of the things that I found after a while, I got very confused, because I started noticing that in one book, one guy was a member of the mob, and then in another book, he was working for the CIA, and in a third book, he was funded by the FBI, and then sometimes he was working for the Secret Service. And really confusing. And I, to start with, I thought, my God, they haven't got the facts right here. But then in the end, I understood, no, they were all correct. They were the same guy who was working for the CIA, but also for the mob, and sometimes for the FBI, and so on. So it's like, nowadays, I think it's very difficult to tell the difference between the mob and the CIA. They're so in bed with each other, and it's sort of the two sides of the same coin. And then with this template, once I started comparing these different assassinations, it was like I started seeing like a bullet point list almost of how they do this and how they get away with it, you know, how they dupe the public into thinking that it's the work of a lone crazy guy. It's always a lone crazy guy, and the reason why they always want a lone crazy guy is because if there's more than one perpetrator, then, and it's planned, then it's a so-called conspiracy, and then you have to take legal action in a different way. But if he's alone, you don't need a motive, and that's also why they want him crazy, because if he's crazy, no need for a motive. He was crazy, he went up, he shot him, and for no reason. So there's no reason to look into it either. And then they take this patsy and they lock him away, or they kill him and throw away the key or whatever, and case closed, boom. That's the general idea. Anyway, started comparing these cases with... Sorry?
No. I like the method. Continue, please.
I'm sorry. There's a slight delay on the line here. I'm sorry about that.
Go ahead.
No, then I started... I got more and more interested in the Martin Luther King assassination and Robert Kennedy and Abraham Lincoln and Julius Caesar and so on. And the more I looked into them, the clearer this template came out. And then I suddenly started seeing, in the meantime, the Swedish Prime Minister had been shot in 1986 by a lone crazy guy. And up until then, I thought I lived in a country where you could trust the police, where, you know, there were good guys and bad guys, and the police were the good guys, and I totally trust them. They said it was a lone crazy guy, and I thought, yeah, for sure. But then after a while, there were these weird things happening in Sweden. And after a while, I started recognizing the pattern. So I compared to the other assassinations, and I came to a point where I said, my God, if the Swedish police or the Swedish investigation is following the same template, then within the next few weeks, they're going to come up with whatever that was, finding a new evidence pointing, I can't remember what it was. But sure enough, within 2-3 weeks, boom, there it was. And that really freaked me out, because then at that point, I felt, oh my God, I'm living in a different country than I thought. I mean, if this is going on in Sweden and it's following exactly the same template as in the States and other countries, I mean, there might be very strong connections. So from then on, I started lifting, going to a higher point of view, seeing if I could somehow connect these cases. And sure enough, I've been able to track down members of these. It's actually a lot of the same members, the assassination team. Some of the same members of this team were part of the JFK assassination. They killed Che Guevara. They were the Watergate burglars. They were part of the Robert Kennedy assassination. They were part of Martin Luther King assassination. And people who were actually in Dealey Plaza in 1963 were also on location in Stockholm, February 1986, being part of that. And these guys have been so active for so many years, it's incredible. They're still now, quite a few of them are dead, but they're in their late 70s and 80s, and some of them are still active. Some of them are still doing hits, you know. So I put a lot of effort identifying these people, and I'll be happy to give them a more detailed description if you're interested.
Yes, please. Let's hear that. Yes.
Okay, one of the main groups that I found was that in the early 1960s, under President Dwight Eisenhower, he was very worried because Fidel Castro had just taken over Cuba, and he had kicked out all the casinos and all the American financial interest on this island, who was a criminal haven, you know, like a wonderland for the government and lots of criminal elements in government and so on. So they were very pissed off, and they wanted to somehow get rid of this guy, Fidel Castro, because they couldn't trust him at all. So Dwight Eisenhower, he gave his vice president the task to create a hit team, a professional hit team, and it was named Operation 40. This vice president was Richard Nixon, and he put together this team. They were mostly exiled Cubans and high CIA officers. The guy they put in charge of the funding was a man by the name of George Herbert Walker Bush Sr. That means Boy George father, Prescott Bush son. He was the guy who was put in charge of funding this group, and he got the money from some of these companies that had been thrown out from Cuba, but also from oil tycoons in Texas and the military-industrial complex and so on. Now, this hit team was trained, and they were doing several attacks on Fidel Castro, but they failed. Then the day came when a decision was taken to take out JFK, and so what they did was they just turned the cannon towards JFK instead. So in Dealey Plaza that day, you had quite a lot of the members of Operation 40 in the Deltics building, the school book depository, on the grass and all, and so on. I can identify all of them if you want. But there were several of these people were directly involved in Operation 40. Some of the other people were from the Dallas Police Department, but also the Chicago Mobs and their hitmen. And also there was one guy from the mob in Marseille in France that they had taken in that day. It's like just like when they killed Julius Caesar, you know, everybody involved had to dip their hands in blood so that they couldn't point at the other and anyone else. You know, everybody needed to be guilty to keep it a secret. Okay, so the same people, this Operation 40, the reason why they were called Operation 40 was that to start with there were 40 members. And the CIA part of it was David Ackley Phillips, very, very high up in the CIA, the controller of Lee Harvey Oswald, the Patsy, but also the controller of one of the shooters, a man by the name of James Files, who's still alive. He was the guy behind the picket fence. And also he was the controller of an assassin called Michael Vernon Townley, who was later involved in many, many assassinations all over the world, and on location in Stockholm 1986, taking part of the hit on the Swedish Prime Minister. Then you have the Watergate burglar. These people were also from Operation 40, and a major reason for this burglary was because Richard Nixon was freaking out and wanted to cover his part in the JFK assassination. They wanted to get in there and get rid of some evidence. But they were also, there was one member called David Morales. He was in Dealey Plaza, deeply involved in the assassination. He was also at the Ambassador Hotel in Los Angeles when Robert Kennedy was shot in 68. He was also the guy who was actually the one who shot and killed Che Guevara. Che Guevara was one of Fidel Castro's closest friends and associate that had escaped down to Bolivia, but they tracked him down. And the guy who tracked him down was a man by the name of Felix Rodriguez. Now, Felix Rodriguez was George Bush Sr.'s right hand when it came to the funding of this group, but he was also deeply involved in many, many assassinations, and also the Iran-Contras affair. He was working closely with Oliver North and many, many other people. And he was the one who tracked Che Guevara down. He was also the guy who gave the order to shoot him. And to this very day, as far as I know, he's walking around with Che Guevara's wristwatch, and he's very proud of that one. Then you have, the murder of John Lennon. The official story is that there's this crazy guy, Mark Chapman, who is, I don't know what kind of stupid story they came up with, but that he wanted to be famous or whatever. It's the same thing they try to pull off every time with this lone crazy guy. And anyway, this guy was standing waiting outside the Dakota building when John Lennon and Yoko Ono came back from the studio. It's very important to understand where and what was going on with John Lennon at the time he was shot, because he was just about to release his, the album, his comeback album. And John Lennon was a big problem to this military-industrial complex, and because their agenda is death and destruction. That is what they thrive on. And anyone who stands up and speaks, stands up in truth and peace and compassion and love, all of these beautiful things that are the reason we are here. These people like John Lennon, Bob Marley, Lady Diana, Gandhi, Martin Luther King, and so on, these people are the ones that become their targets, and very sadly, quite a few of them have been taken out. And John Lennon was one of these guys where if he said something, millions of people really did listen. And he was the guy who said, imagine a world with no armies, with no wars, you know, where everybody's brother and sister, no religion. He was also the one who said, you know, don't go to war, give peace a chance, all of these things. That was a major problem. And he was hated by J. Edgar Hoover and many of the other people in this violent war machine syndicate. I don't know what to call them, really. Anyway, when they came to the Dakota building, Mark Chapman was standing to the right, and Yoko Ono left the limo, and then John Lennon came a few steps after her. Yoko Ono entered the building, and John Lennon was on his way in when several shots were fired, and he fell down, deadly wounded. He started crawling into the building. He was taken to with the ambulance and so on, and later died in hospital. But if you look at the crime scene, which is what I always do, with a Farmer Brown logic, you know, 1 + 1 = 2. It doesn't matter if you got a fancy robe and a beautiful title saying you're some kind of expert. If you say 1 + 1 = 34, I know you are lying, because it's just not true. So if you look at a crime scene just with a very simple but open outlook, and look at the evidence there, you will start seeing what actually happened. And this evening, John Lennon, when you look at the evidence, he was hit several times, and all shots fired were straight from the left. Mark Chapman, the so-called assassin, he was standing to the right, behind him to the right, and all shots fired from the left. So who was standing to the left? You don't have to be very clever to find out that there must be someone standing there. And this very evening, this evening only, there was a doorman that worked extra. His name was, he was a very nice-looking elderly gentleman in his late 60s or something like that, a little bald with glasses, nice smile and so on. His name was José Perdomo. And for 10 years, he was one of the highest-ranking officers in Operation 40. Now, you go figure, how big are the chances of a guy like him just working extra as a doorman the very evening when something like this happens? And it just goes on and on like that. You look at other big events, and these people keep popping up again and again and again and again. So this is what I've spent many years trying to reveal, and also the methods, how they do it, which I'll be happy to go into if you're interested.
Okay, yes, I'd like to hear about these methods and techniques.
Okay, one of the, they've got several standard methods, and they use it on a regular basis. I tell you, once you become aware of them, you will see them being carried out almost on a daily basis on different levels. One of them is a very simple one, distraction. You know, you want some people to look the other way while you're doing something. You make something explode, or you put some event in the newspapers, or anything like that, just to draw away the attention. And while the public eye is directed in that direction, then you do all of the things you need to do, but sort of in the dark that is accomplished by this. This is typical, like if you remember, for instance, Monica Lewinsky or these type of things, you know, when the media suddenly are focused for months on something totally not important, like did she give him a blowjob or didn't she not? Or did she not? I mean, the whole media is looking that way, and what they did not look at was what was going on in the background. And we're talking like the Iran-Contras, all of these things that were just slipping away without nobody really knowing what was going on. Distraction. Another one is called stepping stones, that they move forward their agenda with things just a little here, a little there, a little over here, a little over there, but so that people will not see that these different events are connected, because if they saw that they were connected, they would react and say, whoa, 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 wait a second, what are you up to? In the last few years, since more and more people are waking up, they have had to speed it up a lot more. They used to be quite discreet with this thing, you know, so that it was only people who were really aware that that saw these things moving forward. But now so many people are aware, so they're pushing forward their agenda in a much faster way, and very sloppy nowadays. And the major one is an old Roman tactic, again, back to the old Romans, called problem, reaction, solution. You know, like if you look at like a military coup in Chile or Argentina and so on, where the military wanted to take over the country, because they, you know, sponsored by the USA, wanted to, for instance, kick out Salvador Allende in 1973. By the way, he was shot on 9/11. They're very much into, like, ritual dates and numerology, and I'm not really sure why, but all of these dates are very strange ones to start looking into them. Anyway, so if when they took out Allende, who was a beloved elected president by the people. They absolutely adored him. But what he wanted was to kick out the, just like on Cuba, kick out all these American companies and multinational companies and so on. So they needed to stop him. So they sent down a team. Some of them were members of the Operation 40 and so on. And overnight, more or less overnight, they killed the old president, they shot people right, left, and center, and they got themselves in a position of power. But, you know, if you do that with violence in a country, you will have problems with the population, because you will have lots of demonstrations, you will have guerrilla movements, underground movements, you will have all of, you might have international financial boycotts of your country and so on. So in the end, it will almost take as many soldiers as there are people living in the country to control them, and then you have to fill it with jails with people who don't agree, and then if you shoot some of them, you execute some of them, then you have problems with their families, then you have to torture some of them to tell them where the rest are, and it's a mess. It's an absolute mess. So what you do instead is you use this method called problem, reaction, solution. So, for instance, if I'm, let's say I'm the president of Denmark or something like that, and I want the police to have, almost like you have now in the States, like the police to be like a military force almost, with tanks in the streets where they can kick in doors and make raids and put away people without a trial, without the possibility with a lawyer for years and so on. If I just did that, I would have a massive problem with the population, And everybody would go like, come on. And also international, there would be lots of reactions. So what I do instead, I secretly create a problem. And this problem nowadays is almost always a bomb or a mass shooting. And so I place this bomb. It's very important where I place it. I place it somewhere where there are children and women and children. These are the key things. Because what I want to create is an emotional reaction from the population. It needs to be emotional so that you don't think with the one with the thing you got between your ears. And the way to do that is with women and children. Sometimes they use nurses or nuns as well, but it won't do any, you know, if you blow up an old people home or something like that, doesn't really work. Women and children, that's the key word. So what I do is I secretly place this bomb in where there are women and children, daycare centers, something like that, subway stations, but you need to have it so that there are women and children there. In the meantime, I prepare a patsy that I can blame this thing on, and this they have to work well in media. So in the old days, in the 60s, it used to be East Germans, you know, or Soviet Russians, they were good, you know, they were the boogeyman. Then after the Cold War, when that ended, they changed the trend and they went to the Muslim trend. They pumped us with this, you know, Islam equals terror, and if you're a Muslim, you're a terrorist. They pumped our subconscious so much with the same. And the reason why this is because the Muslims are super good as a patsy. You know, they look dark. They got big eyebrows. They're dark. They got a big mustache off, and their name could be Hussein Hoppala Shklafna, something like that. That can work really well in media. And also, since you managed to label their religion, that they're terrorists. I mean, nowadays you can only say he's Muslim and people will right away think, oh my God, he's got a bomb in his pocket. Anyway, now this has been going on a bit too far now. So now they change it away from the Muslim. Now they change the trend into, now it can be blonde and blue-eyed or geeks or peace activists or anything like that so that people would think, oh my God, not even do I need to be afraid of former Russians and Muslims. Now it can also be my next door neighbor or my son or somebody in my film. Oh my God, I need even more protection. Anyway, so I prepare the patsy, and while I'm preparing the patsy, I need to prepare evidence that would point. So as soon as this bomb explodes, the evidence will point at this poor guy who's absolutely innocent. Absolutely innocent. Or it could be a group of people or a church or a so-called sect or whatever. Anyway, in the meantime as well, I arrange for my own investigation to be on standby. This investigation is made by people that I control. People that when they move in, they will just knock everybody to the side. Normal, honest, decent detectives and policemen will just be pushed aside, and my investigation will push in. And this investigation, their only task is to cover the whole thing up, to point in every other direction than the real truth. And they will not listen to any witnesses. Instead, they will disregard them. They will even threaten them and terrorize them and so on. Anyway, so I got the bomb in place, I got the patsy, I got the my own investigation on standby, got the evidence ready, and then the time for this is important as well, because people are most emotional in the morning. So I wait until they've just had breakfast, you know, really they're still waking up, and what's the time? 8:15, give them 5 more minutes, and here we go, boom! Off goes this bomb, and media, who I control to a large extent, are on standby, and they start pushing out these horrific images of blown up children and women and blood and guts. And this pumping it out in the media, at the same time straight away pointing to the patsy, and all of this to create the reaction from the public saying, oh my God, something needs to be done, this is horrible, and then they turn towards me, who they elected to fix these things, not knowing that I was the one putting the bomb there. And they say, please, please, do something, do something. And then I say, well, the only way I can deal with this is by putting tanks in the streets, having militarized police officers who have weapons that can blow the whole world up, and who with unlimited power to do all of these things. And the population will just say, yes, please, do it, do it. You know, take away even more our liberties, put some more cameras up there and just get going. And then I move forward with tanks and all of these things. I become the hero, and people don't even notice what happened. They think that it was the patsy. And then what I do, I kick in some doors and I get rid of some of the people I had problems with anyway. When I do this, nowadays they like martial law and these things as well. And then I get the patsy, and then after a week or so, I start moving back. I withdraw the tanks, I withdraw a lot of it, but I leave about 20% of the police there with bulletproof vests and super guns and all of these things. And it's all, I leave it there for your protection. It's for your protection. And people would get just accept it and say, thank God we're in secure hands, not knowing that I'm the mass murderer that created this whole thing. And this is what's going on. Is now you have all these mass shootings, and I tell you, I have been looking into a lot of these and a lot of so-called terror acts and a lot of assassinations. And I have, during 30 years, I have not been able to find one real terrorist. I'm not sure there is such a thing. Every single time, it points back to the same group of people. The same. If they're not funded by them, they're equipped by them, they're trained by them, or they're part of carrying out, or they also, one thing that I forgot to say as well is that when I do this bomb thing, I also have a drill at the same time. And this drill, it's an official drill, but it's doing exactly the same as the live event. But many of the people who are in the drill have absolutely no idea that suddenly it turns live in the middle of it all. And this is also one way of getting the patsy in there, carrying things that can look really suspicious and so on, because he thinks he's just part of a drill, and then suddenly it goes live and he's the patsy. He's the one who's going to get blamed and taken out and killed or massacred or whatever they do with him and so on. So be aware of these drills. Be aware. Because when they say, oh, we're going to do this drill and this drill, whoa, ho, 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 stay away. You know, they've done it. And now with all of these mass shootings in the States going on, once again, it's problem, reaction, solution. And what they're trying is to de-arm the population, to say that all of these shootings is because of the weapons. So give up your weapons. But if you do that, I'm not a man of violence, but I'm telling you, if you give up your arms and just put them down, this group will just take over in a very, very violent way. So you are more or less the last stand for the rest of the world, because you are the only country with an armed population that they cannot get away with just invading like this. So it's very important to become aware of what is going on, and that these mass shootings nowadays, they don't even use, it's not even real events anymore. You know, in the old days, they had a good budget, they had plenty of time to plan it, and they were really good, you know, with details and multi-layered conspiracies. Nowadays, it's super sloppy. I don't know. I think they're in such a rush for time, you know, and low budget and so on. So they started using staged events where they use, it's not even real victims. They use actors, you know, like crisisactors.org. You can check that website out. It's one of the places where they use actors.
Sorry, all they were in the final second.
They
Sorry, Ole, we're in the final seconds of the show. I'd like to have you back on again very soon. Ole, give out your website, and then we'll end the show.
Okay, I didn't mean to babble on like this. My website is lightonconspiracies.com. That's lightonconspiracies.com. And if anyone knows, I really would like to lift this to the next level, to make documentaries, to show in a very visceral way